Okay, so this week's parsha is Vayishlach, and last week the drasha that I sent out prior to Shabbos, so my mother actually took issue with one of the things that I wrote, and that is I made it sound like, and I think it's true, that on some level Yaakov made peace with Lavan, that after all they had been through, all the animosity and the deceit, and the tension that existed, you know, at the very end, the Torah says they made a bris, they made a covenant, and they sat down to a suda, they sat down to a meal, and I showed, demonstrated the most mafarshim assumed that the meal that Yaakov sat down to was not a meal he had just with his own family, with his sons, but rather with Lavan and Lavan's family. And I therefore try to demonstrate the fact that even when we have tensions with other people, there are often there are ways that we can make amends, that we can make shalom, we can make a peace. But my mother contended that okay, well maybe they made a bris, they made a covenant, but Yaakov got out of there as soon as he could. It's like okay, you know, shake hands and I'm gone. Right, they went their separate ways, and they themselves, that was part of the covenant, that they would not cross the border. You stay here, I stay here, and Lavan, or Yaakov, must have been happy as can be, never to see a Lavan again. And I think that's true. That is a correct reading of last week's Parsha, that after all that Yaakov had been through, you know, on some level, you know, both things occur. He didn't make a covenant. They sort of ended off some semblance of understanding, but at the same time, one can definitely understand that Yaakov would not be interested to ever see Lavan again. And a similar thing occurs, I believe, in the beginning of this week's Parsha, together with Yaakov's encounter with Esav. And once again, he has to meet up with someone who he had such friction with early in his life, his brother, and there's this whole embrace and conversation. And, you know, you get the sense that they're sort of tiptoeing around what they really feel about each other. And, again, they sort of leave each other at the end of the story peacefully. But one certainly gets the sense that Yaakov is relieved not to have to ever see Esav again, and that they go their separate ways. Esav sort of asks Yaakov to join him, and Yaakov, you know, makes his excuses why he can't. And, again, you get the sense that Yaakov wants nothing to do with Esav, doesn't want to be influenced, doesn't want to be at the mercy of Esav, and he's happy to let go and to not encounter his brother again in the future. With one exception, that's what I want to highlight, and what I want to address today, you know, is the question that I think when you study the book of Bereishis really caused us to consider and grapple with, and that there seems to be two different approaches that are very different between how Yaakov encounters the world around him and how Avram encounters the world around him. And I'll explain the following. So I said, like, Yaakov separated from Esav and he's happy never to see him again, but he did see him one more time again. When did he see him again? So that's the end of this week's Parsha. Towards the end of this week's Parsha, where we are told that finally, after everything that Yaakov had been through, running away initially from Esav and being all those years away in Haran, and then returning and that initial encounter with Esav, and then making his way closer, going from north to south, heading closer to Israel, and then the whole story with the terrible story with Dina and Shechem. Well, and then terribly, Rachel dies right along the way, right, and Derech Ephrata. And she's buried separately on the way. Finally, we're told, Vayavo Yaakov el Yitzchak Aviv Mamre Kiryas Arba. The Yaakov comes to Yitzchak, his father, Mamre, which is Kiryas Arba. He Chavron, which is Chavron, Asher Garshom Avam Yitzchak. This very long-winded pasuk, which I'll get back to in a quick second. The Yaakov comes to Yitzchak, his father, who's in Mamre, Kiryas Arba, which is Chavron, where Avram and Yitzchak lived. And then we're told that Yitzchak lived for 180 years. Vayigva Yitzchak vayamas. And then Yitzchak dies. Vayasef el amav, zakemis vayamim, vayikbaroso Esav Yaakov banav. And lo and behold, similar to when Avram died, So there had been a separation between Yitzchak and Yishmael. Yet the Torah tells us at the end of Parshas Chayisara, when Avram dies, that both Yitzchak and Yishmael bury Avram. So now when Yitzchak passes away, here as well, we are told that in fact, his two sons, Yaakov and Esav, they bury their father. It's like very beautiful, very sweet. And we know this is true often with families, that sometimes families, people don't speak to each other for years, sometimes for bad reasons, sometimes it's just the way life is. You go in different directions, different locations, and we don't always get together for simchas, but, you know, God forbid when someone dies, a funeral, so in non-corona years, you know, people come together, everyone plays a shiva visit, you come in for the funeral, and, you know, the family reunites at those moments. So it's very, sweet. You see that Yitzchak and Yishmael do it for Avram, and now Yaakov and Esav do it for Yitzchak. But what caught my attention when I was preparing, and I was thinking about this idea of, you know, of Yaakov and his relationship with Lavan, and then with Esav, and not wanting to have much to do with them, is this long-winded introduction. That Yaakov came to Yitzchak, now he's returning back from Israel, probably a little bit before he dies, probably comes back to his father, he hasn't seen him in all those years, and where is his father? Mamre Kiryas Arba Hi Chevron, Asher Gam Shem Avram Yitzchak. It gives like all these synonyms, it seems, for Chevron. What Chevron is Mamre, it's Kiryat Arba, it's Chevron. You know, today when you go to Hebron, so there, if you've been to Hebron, I have this affinity going to Hebron. Almost every time I go to Israel, I feel the. I'm not a big person who goes to Kfarim a lot. Goes to holy tzaddikim that are buried in where they're buried. People practice to go there to daven to Hakadosh Baruch Hu and the merit of the tzaddik. I don't do that much, but for some reason, Hebron pulls me to go to the Maris HaMachpelah and to daven there. Almost every time I'm in Israel, I always try to take the opportunity to go to Hebron. And you go to Hebron, you take the bus. First, you pass through the Israeli Yeshuv city of Kiryat Arba, and then you come to Hebron. And you know, here it seems like Kiryat Arba, Hebron, it's all the same place. Mamre, we know that Mamre is Hebron because earlier in the Torah. Back in a Parshas Lech Lecha, right after Lot and Avram separate, so the Torah tells us is right at the end of Shlishi. Again, right after the separation, Vayal Avram Yavo Vayesha Beilnei Mamre, that Avram dwells in the tents of Mamre. Asher B'Chevron, Eilnei Mamre is in Chevron. Who's Mamre? So Mamre, we're told also in Parshas Lech Lecha, is Avram's good friend. He has these three friends, Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre. It seems like there's these three brothers. And Mamre is the one who later on gives Avram some sort of advice before he did his bris milah, circumcision. The whole question, what exactly that advice was, for another, that's another time. But Mamre lives in Hebron, and that's where Avram situates his tent. And here, like the Torah seems to go out of its way to tell you, Mamre, Kiryas Arba, he Hebron. So as I've told you the last few weeks, I've become enamored with the Netziv. So I looked at the Netziv, and I said, what does the Netziv say on this pasuk? So what he said blows me away, because on the surface, it's all the same location. Right? Mamre, Chevron, Kiryas Arba. In fact, the Kli Yatar, in the beginning of Parshas Chaye Sarah, when we're told about Sarah of Imena, of course, being buried in Chevron, and Avram purchasing the Maris HaMachpelah, says the Kli Yakar, he quotes the Medrash, the Yalkut. The Yalkut Masach Shahailo Makom Ze Arba Shemos. This one city had four names. There's four names. You know, it's like, I don't know, like New York City and Gotham, the Big Apple. It's just all the same place. It's just, you know, different names for the same location. So he says, Chevron is similar. Four names. What are the four names? Eshkol, Mamre, Kiryas Arba, Chevron. Right, that's synonymous. They're all just the different ways of referring to the same place, the same location. Says in the Tziv, and something that he saw that at first I didn't understand, but I think it really is going to highlight this tension and perhaps a major distinction between Avram and Yaakov. Very different perspective. The Tziv says, Hayadua Hodia calls the Akasav. Why is the Torah going out of its way to tell me that where Yaakov went to? Just tell me he came back to Yitzchak. Alpha Gashik for Yadua Lorohitev. We all know that Yitzchak, right? Yitzchak lives in Hebron. Avram lives in Hebron. That's the family residence. It's in Hebron. So why is it telling me everything? Hebron, Mamre, Kiryas Arba, Lamdenu, to teach you the following, suggests in the Tziv. Shalodar Yaakov Ubana Be'elone Mamre. That Yaakov, unlike his father and grandfather, did not live in Elonei Mamre. Now, Elonei Mamre, we just saw a few minutes ago in Parshas Lecha, is Chevron. So look what the Tziv says. That Yaakov did not, though, live in Elonei Mamre. Ella, rather, Mitchilo Bal L'Sham Shadar Sham Yilai. Originally, he came there. Originally, he came to Elonei Mamre. Why did Yaakov, when he came back from Lavan's house, go to Elonei Mamre? See his father, of course. That's where his father lived. He hasn't seen his father in all those years. Avo Acharkach, but says in the Tziv, but after he saw his father, Akar di Rosso leChevron, he moved to Chevron. He moved to Chevron. Isn't Elonei Mamre Chevron? So we'll just continue. Vahainu, what does that mean? He moved to Chevron. Be'emek Chevron. He moved to the valley of Chevron, Samach La'ir, near the city. He lived near his father, but not in the city, not in Elonei Mamre. He lived in the valley, right? Some in Emek Chevron. But he did not associate himself with the residents of Chevron. So if he didn't want to live with his father, so what? He didn't like his father. Is that why he moved out? So he says, "V'hashabacha liyos dirasa v'chevron lo mishum dirasa zera mamre." And the reason why Yaakov chose to live in Hebron was not because, like a Zaydi Avram, that he wanted to be with the descendants of Mamre. And Avram established a relationship with Mamre, Aner Eshkol Mamre. But that was not what Yaakov did not want to have a relationship with them. El Bishum Shagar Shum Avram Yitzchak. He moved to that location because it's a holy town. Right, that's the place that the holy city of Hebron, where Avram and Yitzchak he daha irsh niskatcha b'torah b'avoda b'mos avosav. Right, Hebron's one of the four holy cities we say of Israel. One of the four holy cities of Israel: Yerushalayim, Hebron, Tveria, and Tzfat. So Zaydi and the Tati, right, the father and the grandfather lived in Hebron. He's also going to live in Hebron. But Yaakov had no interest to live next door to the Amori, to the Amorites who lived in Hebron, unlike his grandfather. Because what was Yaakov's approach? Yaakov's approach, and perhaps this was learned, I think I'm going to argue in a second, was to live alone, not to live with others. So first of all, just to clarify just the geography here, I was very confused when I saw this, because you get the sense from the Torah, again from those psukim in Lech Lecha, and here in Vayishlach, and earlier in Chayisara, that it's all the same place. Hebron, Emet Hebron, Mamre, Kiryas Arba, it's all Hebron, it's the same place. So I decided to post this on my rabbinic WhatsApp group, see if anyone had any thoughts. So I got two responses. One response was from a rabbi who cited that Kli Yakar I mentioned a moment ago, who says it's all the same place. And then Dovi Nadel, who grew up in our community, Dovi, I never knew he was on this rabbinic got so much nachas that Dovi responded he's on this rabbinic WhatsApp group. So he shared with me two articles. And then I decided I'm going to send an email to Rabbi Menachem Liebtag. It comes to our community almost every year, and every lead tag is an expert in the Torah and in the geography. He's a tour guide in Israel. I was thinking of also sending an email to Simcha Hachbam, who's the person I always go when I go to Hebron. He gives the tours of Hebron. He's originally from Staten Island. He's good friends with our members in the Nadels. So, and he probably, what Rabbi Liebtag told me, Simcha's probably told me in the past, but for some reason I forgot about it. So here's what the Menachem Liebtag said. It tells me the following. Tel Rumeida, I hope I'm presenting that properly. Tel Rumeida is the main hilltop that was the site of ancient Hebron. If you've been to Hebron, you can probably appreciate this. That the original city was on the top of the hill. And today, when you go with those tours, those Hebron tours, you go with Simcha Hachman, he will take them, the first stops he'll take you in Hebron is to Tel Rumeida. It's where there's like seven trailers that there was a major political battle there years ago with the Israeli government and the settlers, and they were given a short window of time. Whatever amount of trailers they could put down there, that would stay. You always tell them there was a machlokas about the eighth trailer because it was like hanging on the ground. Well, it was like hanging over the ground. The question was it like loved it? Was it close enough to the ground to be considered the ground, not the ground? And that's the whole story of that. So that's that. And then eventually there's additional apartments there, and there's a, I don't know if there's a yeshiva there now. And if you just down the block from there is you can go and see there's a big army base up there, and you can go. There's a tradition that just around the corner is the farm of Yishai and Rus, and so that's the hill. That's Tel Rumeida up there. And also when you're up there, they show you the excavations of what they tell you is the original wall of Hebron, which makes sense according to Rabbi Leibtag is saying that that's the original city was up on the hill. And then you look down from there in the valley below, the Emek Hebron. What do you see down below? You see the Maris HaMachpelah, right? The Cave of the Patriarchs. It's not on the hilltop. It's down below in the valley. And that's the Emek Hebron. Then Rabbi Leibtag continues, right? In the valley below to the east of Tel Rumeida is Maris HaMachpelah. That's the same as Emek Hebron. And that's what I'll show you in a second. That's where Yaakov sends Yosef from. When Yaakov, the next expulsion sends Yosef to check on the brothers in Shechem, right? You know, see where they are. He sends them from Emet Hebron. What's Elonei Mamre? He says, Elonei Mamre is like Bloomfield Hills, right? It's like the nice area of town. Elonei Mamre is most likely an open, flat area a bit north of Tel Rumeida, like a suburb of Hebron. The entire area, he concludes, is referred to as Hebron, right? Like, we live in Detroit, but when you're traveling somewhere, so, you know, I live in south of Michigan, but when you're traveling, you don't say you live in south, you say, I live in Detroit, right? When a New Yorker comes to visit, they say, where are you from? New York, okay, we're in New York. I live in Queens, okay, we're in Queens, right? We're in Brooklyn. So, you'd be saying, yeah, I live in New York. So if you live in Emek Hebron, you live in Hebron proper, you live in Kiryat Arba, you're in Hebron. But there are different sections. And so here now with this background, this is like what the Nativ is saying, and this is what I think is profound, and I'll show you the Nativ emphasizes this point to a great extent. Where did Avram live and Yitzchak? They lived up on the hill. They lived in the main city or in the fancy suburbs of Elonei Mamre. They were in the heart of the city. Yaakov, when he returns to see his dad, he goes to the heart of the city to see his father. Right? His father is he wants to see his dad. But he himself, where does he situate his family? Not in Tel Rumeida, not in Elonei Mamre, but he situates himself in Emek Hebron, down in the valley. Down below in the valley again, and that we know from next week's parsha, because the pasuk says very clearly that when Yaakov sends Yosef to see what's going on with the brothers, Vayishalacheyu me'emek Hebron vayavo Shechema, he sends them from the valley. And according to the Nativ, why does Yaakov not live in the family house in Elonei Mamre? Because he did not want to associate with the Emori. He didn't want to associate with it. His father did, his grandfather did, but Yaakov did not. And I'd like to suggest, because perhaps Yaakov was, after all of his experiences, with terrible experiences, with his brother Esav and his uncle Lavan, he needed to keep his distance. He was very leery of being negatively influenced by people who did not share his values. But the question is, clearly his father and grandfather weren't concerned about that. They lived amongst the people. So the Netziv, in his further commentary, the Harchiv Dover, raises that question. And he says, V'lo shehaya Yaakov mechulak b'deos deos chas v'shamim avosav, am Yitzhak. He says, it can't be that Yaakov disagreed fundamentally with his father and grandfather regarding this issue, where to live. Ella, shehema lohayu mitufalim b'banim. But they, meaning his father and grandfather, they weren't blessed with a lot of kids. Right? Each one had a few children. They weren't dealing with constantly with chinuch, with their kids' education. And therefore, what was their agenda, Avram and Yitzchak? They wanted to be amongst the people. They wanted to influence them. They wanted to inspire them. They wanted to demonstrate, you know, who God is, that there's one God, there's monotheism, one God who created the world, who runs the world. And they can only do that if they lived amongst the people. Mashenk and Yaakov, but Yaakov at this juncture in his life, and perhaps forever moving forward, he was raising kids, and then they were young at this time, still a lot of them. What was he concerned about? He was concerned about his kids not being negatively influenced by their surroundings. For him, that was the first priority. And for him, he wanted to be in the environs of Chevron. He wanted to feel taken the Kedusha of Chevron, but he was not going to live in Chevron proper. All right, he was going to live down in the valley, separate from the people. And you see that that's Yaakov's like modus operandi moving forward. In fact, even a little bit late, even earlier, when he's returning from Israel, and we know the whole incident with Dina and Shechem, right? So that where is Yaakov living at that stage? The Torah is very specific. Again, also in this week's parsha, the Torah tells us that but. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem, Asher Be'eretz Kanan, and Vayichan Es Pnei Ha'ir. And where does he establish his residence? Not inside of Shechem. The Ramban points out, Pnei Ha'ir means outside the city. He kept his distance. And unfortunately, Dina, Vateitzei Dina wanted to see what was going on inside the city. Right? She was interested. Hey, especially something's forbidden, you know, why is it forbidden? There's always a balance with the thing of parents, you know, about, you know, what do you allow, what don't you allow, and if you don't allow something, that's more interested in it. But Yaakov is nervous, right? He's constantly nervous about negative influences and dealing with people who may be very harmful. And it's fascinating, and jumping ahead a couple parshiyos, just to follow the same pattern, so we find that in Parshas Vayigash, when Yosef finally reveals himself to his brothers and tells the brothers it's still going to be a number of more years for the famine and to please, you know, bring father down. So where does he want his father to live? The Yeshafta Be'eretz Goshen. I want you to come to Egypt, but to be situated in Goshen. And the Ramban says, Haya Yosef Yodea. Yosef knew about his father. You see now how Yaakov influenced his children. Yosef Yodea Ba'avishal Yirtul Abba Be'eretz Mitzrayim Asher Shama Biril Malchus. He knew his father would have no interest and no desire to live in the capital city of Egypt. He'd want nothing to do with the Egyptians. Right? He would want to live separate, distinct. And therefore, Yosef, to sort of calm his father down, said, yeah, you're going to come to Egypt, but you're going to be separate. You're going to be in this distant suburb called Goshen. You're not going to be situated with the rest of the people. And just to give one more source, at the very end of the entire Torah, so the Siv picks up on this in his commentary at the end of the Torah. So the Torah says, literally at the end, at the end of Zos HaBracha, this is the final Aliyah that we read, the Chasin Torah. Bonel Kei Kedem. This is the final Aliyah on Simchas Torah as we conclude the Torah. So the pasuk says, "Vayishkon Yisrael Betach Badad Ein Yaakov." That God says that Israel will dwell alone. Israel, the Jewish people, will dwell alone. Ein Yaakov. Right, similar to Yaakov. It says in the Tziv on his commentary here in the end of the Torah, Hainu midasum v'kasho shel Yaakov, sheyibanav yukein. Yaakov always desired for his children to dwell alone. The Yaakov always wanted his descendants to be separate. And I want to conclude with just the following question, intention. And again, I ask the question, should we follow Avram or should we follow Yaakov? Avram is the one who situates his tent in the Elnei Mamre, right? Avram is the one who wants to influence the world, and you're only going to influence the world if you're living amongst the people of the world. And how else are you going to share your values and to teach them and to model for them? But Yaakov has been tarnished, I would suggest, has been seriously impacted by negative experiences of living with people that have harmed him in a very significant way, Esav and Lavan. And it seems like he has no interest in living amongst the people of the world, that to protect the sanctity and the well-being of his family and to ensure their survival, he's of the opinion that we need to be separate, that we cannot live among the nations of the world, but rather Badad. We need to live alone. And he according to the Tziv, that's what he does when he camps near Hebron. That's the instruction that Yosef understands he needs to give over, that they're going to live in they're going to be living in Goshen and not in Egypt proper. And perhaps Yaakov, you know, knows the family history. He knows that when Avram goes down to Egypt. So Avram emerged okay, but we saw back in Parshas Lech Lecha that Lot was tarnished by his experience in Egypt. Right, he never was the same after he went down with Avram and Sarah to Egypt. And therefore, Yaakov was always very skeptical about living amongst those who don't share our same values. And I think that the question I want to leave you with, it's something I've always struggled with. Is, you know, what does God want for us at the end of the day for the Jewish people? Are we supposed to be separate? Are we supposed to live our lives separated from the nations of the world? Or are we supposed to be out there and influencing and guiding and interacting? And I think you can make the strong argument when you read the Torah that on some level we are supposed to be separate. The whole thrust of the Torah is, you know, for this nation, the Jewish people to receive the Torah, to follow the Torah, and to observe the Torah. But where should we observe the Torah? Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. And who's in the land of Israel? Right? So there are nations of the world where the seven nations are there. But what were we supposed to do when we got to Israel? Send them away, kick them out, right? We weren't, and the Torah over and over again, Sefer Devarim warns us not to learn from their actions, not to be influenced by them. And if we leave them there, we're going to be influenced by them. So then the question is, well, if that's the case, so I also thought, like Avram, that we should influence the world. What's our role? To ignore the rest of society and not to impact in a positive way the rest of the world, right? Yishayahu tells us, we're supposed to be, or like God, you have a light to the nations. I can be a light to the nations if you're not going to have anything to do with them. And so the only answer that I've come up with, and maybe it's the balance between the Yaakov approach and the Avram approach, is that maybe you need to create the model society. You need in the land of Israel to create a society that's based upon the values of which God imparted to us, and to create a just society and a kingdom where there's righteousness and kindness and you're just and fair in your laws, and that they'll come to us. Right? They'll want to learn from us. Right? I think the pinnacle of Jewish history until this point was the time period of Shlomo HaMelech. That's when the Jewish people we were strengthened within the land. We were Shlomo solidified his power, built his kingdom. There was a Beis HaMikdash. Everything was wonderful at that point. And if you recall from Sefer Malachim, that's the story that the Queen of Sheba comes to visit to see Shlomo's wisdom and to be in his court. But that's the ideal. The ideal is you create your model society separate from from those who may be a negative influence, but then you create that society and you'll be able to model it for others. That's the approach that I have taken, the way that to me that makes sense and that resonates. But nonetheless, I think this is an ongoing question that we as Jews, especially in the diaspora and being in exile for all these years and living outside of Israel, and even today within Israel itself with a global society, is this question and is this balance about how much do we separate ourselves, how much do we interact with the world at large? We can create these wonderful bubbles, beautiful communities in Southfield, Michigan, and beautiful communities in Teaneck and in Lakewood, and you can live a beautiful life living in Efrat and in Elon Shvut and in the Gush, Beit Shemesh, and it's like is that the ideal, that you live in that enclosed bubble of Efrat and then you're with all these like-minded people and that's what you're supposed to do? Or then no, you should be out there, go out to Tel Aviv, or you're in Southfield, go to Detroit and try to be a positive influence on the world. Or is there a danger in doing that? Is that something that's too risky? Or does it depend on which stage you are in life? If you have young children, then maybe that's not the smartest thing. But if you're more established, more confident in your values, you've lived life, and you're certain about what direction you're heading in, so you could be like an Avram in a later stage in life, and then situate yourself in the tents of Mamre, not have to be in the Emek in the valley of Hebron. I think there's a question for every Jew to think about constantly, and it's a question for the Jewish people as a whole to consider. And I just conclude, I think that both values are important values, right? About ensuring our integrity and maintaining our values and protecting it and not allow negative influences to harm us, and to take that role very seriously. And at the same time, take very seriously our role to be an Avram and to influence and transform the world. And how you balance the two. So that takes a lot of wisdom, a lot of thinking, and a lot of foresight. And you constantly need to be on guard, and maybe constantly need to make adjustments and changes along the way. But that's a challenge of life. And that's, I think, that's the opportunity, and that's a responsibility that God has put before us. Okay, I hope everyone has a wonderful Shabbos.